Companies that held lots of junk bonds were hit hard again yesterday, despite the stock market rising. From Marketplace, I'm David Brancaccio. In what's developed into the biggest stretch of market turbulence since last summer, investors on Monday pulled out of junk bond funds for the third trading day in a row. Many of these supposedly high-yield funds held bonds in companies that sell commodities, and commodity prices, including oil, have been sinking for more than a year. Add to that this new era that we may be entering, where safer, non-junk investments yield more as the Federal Reserve engineers higher interest rates in the U.S. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has more.
All this started late last week with one junk bond fund, Third Avenue Management. It was suffering big losses on high-risk corporate debt. It shut the gates to investors who wanted to withdraw their money. That's got other investors worried and voting with their dollars in a big sell-off of asset manager stocks. But as investors pull out, these high-yield mutual funds have to sell some of their junk bonds to raise cash. And if they can't find buyers, even at fire sale prices, they might have to shut the gate just like Third Avenue did. Now, no other fund has done that so far, and both the SEC and Massachusetts regulators are now looking at Third Avenue's decision. Meanwhile, the sell-off is spreading. This week, funds that hold European and emerging market higher-risk corporate debt have been falling hard as well.
Mitchell, thank you very much. Waddell & Reed Financial is among the companies with a big junk bond fund holdings. Its stock fell 7.5% on Monday. AllianceBernstein also had big funds advertised as high yield. Its stock fell 7%. U.S. Treasury Secretary Jack Lew is heading to a summit in New York on Thursday about new ways to cut off financing for ISIS, the terrorist movement. As Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports, Lew has a big challenge.
Part of the challenge here? The way ISIS gets its money, mainly through illegal activities.
They are extorting money from the local population.
Rachel Ehrenfeld heads the nonprofit American Center for Democracy.
There is also drug trafficking going on there, arms trafficking.
ISIS gets most of its funding from the territory it controls, either through that extortion or by pumping oil, according to Jonathan Shanzer. He used to track terrorism funding at the Treasury Department.
It's not an easy thing to do.
Shanzer is now at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, a Washington think tank.
The only way to deprive ISIS of their cash is by taking territory away from them.
Shanzer says that's the only way to get at the biggest sources of ISIS funding. He says other things like bombing oil installations or guarding borders against smuggling are just nibbling at the edges. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is listener-supported. To help keep our coverage relevant and hopefully compelling, please make a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today. Your gift, in any amount really, counts twice thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from the Candida Fund. Help us keep you up to date and well-informed wherever you are. Donate at marketplace.org by December 31st. Rational economics doesn't always guide how we make decisions about our money in the real world. As part of our series called Brain Drain with Marketplace's Wealth and Poverty Desk, we're exploring the ways in which our minds are rigged to cost us money. Now, this morning, a conversation about interventions that can make us think better and perhaps save more. Catherine Milkman is Professor of Operations, Information, and Decisions at the Wharton School. Professor Milkman, good morning.
Good morning.
We all want people to save. It's something economists look at a lot because we don't do enough of it generally. But the immediate pain of socking away money is hard. You've been thinking about what to do about this?
We've done some research suggesting that people are more excited and motivated to pursue their goals following what we call fresh start dates. So dates that demarcate the beginning of a new cycle in your life, like the start of a new year or a new month or a new week or following birthdays, following holidays. Those are times when we actually don't feel as much pain about pursuing our goals.
Now, if someone's just blown past your birthday without starting a new savings account, there are other opportunities, right? We have the new year coming up.
We do. The New Year's a great opportunity. Unfortunately, our research actually didn't show that that was particularly motivating in the context of savings. There are a lot of possible reasons for that. It may be a time when we're belt tightening because of Christmas spending, for instance, and it may be harder for people to think about setting aside money. But it might be possible to do it in ways that are distinct from what we tried.
That's interesting. Okay, so we can use these moments in the calendar, perhaps. What about other things that you've studied that might nudge us in the right direction on being more prudent with our money or saving?
So there's another fantastic study that I'm a big fan of and was not a collaborator on, but admire greatly. And that study was done by Shlomo Benarzi and Dick Thaler. And the study looked at a program they call Save More Tomorrow. So what they did is they offered people an opportunity to link savings with future pay increases. So you're signing up for a program where you'll start saving out of your next raise. But as a result, you won't actually see any dip in the paycheck coming home to you. And so people found that very attractive, and it significantly increased savings rates.
But the basic principle is save your raise. But if you put in a system to encourage that, you get good outcomes.
That's right. And I think it's questionable whether if you asked people the day of getting a raise, if they wanted to save, whether you'd see the same benefit. So there's this nice feature of it that when you're making the decision, it's abstract, it's far away. It feels like this is the right thing to do in that future moment. And you don't have to make the decision in the heat of the moment when, hey, you'd really like to have that money to spend on some splurge item.
Catherine Milkman is a professor of operations, information, and decisions at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School. Professor Milkman, thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
All of our Brain Drain series is accumulating at marketplace.org if you're interested. And this week we're wrapping up our stay at the studios at Montclair State University in New Jersey. It's been fun meeting the students and staff at the School of Communication and Media here over the last few months. The Marketplace Bureau in that capital of finance, fashion, media, and sometimes income inequality, known as New York, is now looking spiff. And I thought the new studio sounded solid during a test run. You can tell us what you think of it if you listen in the coming days. Our producers for this program are Justin Ho, Katie Long, and Beatty Jong. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.